Hey, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, Ian Kundle. On the Baseball America Prospect Podcast, we got the whole crew here today. Fun topic for today. We get questions. We do chats every week at baseballamerica.com. And in those, a lot of times the questions we get are questions about, understandably, about players who were less highly regarded, often not even top 30 prospects coming into a season, who then emerge, have big seasons. And the question that people want the answer to is this guy a guy I need to know about? Is this guy of someone who's kind of having a blip of a season, or is this the sign of a key change, a step forward where this is someone who may be a little bit of a late bloomer? We're going to be talking about a number of those prospects today on the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. We're going to kind of cover a lot of teams, a lot of organizations, a lot of levels, because these profiles range from the 24-year-olds who are having really good years in Double A to, we're going to, at the end, we will bring in some, when we say this is kind of be focused on less appreciated prospects, but we are going to talk about some complex league guys who very much are a little bit of a different profile. There are players who I would say fit much more the profile of, they're just emerging as prospects, but very different between, say, a Sebastian Dos Santos, who we're going to talk about, and a Lonnie White Jr., for instance, to give you an example of kind of the range of what we're going to talk about. But great to see you guys, as always. And let's just dive straight in. The idea that came to kind of do the podcast this way kind of would come from writing about Owen Ayers up at baseballamerica.com, wrote about him for Tuesday, so it's been up a day. Ian, by the time you read this, I think Ian's piece on 25 other prospects to watch like this will also be up, you know, rising. So there's multiple places at baseballamerica.com about this. But I want to start with Owen Ayers, the catcher for the Cubs. I'll lay out kind of the biography here and why he is a perfect example of what we're talking about here. So Ayers was a later round pick of the Cubs, catcher out of Marshall. Spent 2 years in JUCO, State College of Florida, JC, 2 years at Marshall. And then I would say 2 years, 24, 25, with the Cubs, where you would say the description would be light hitting catcher, good defensive profile. And that had kind of been his story going back to 4 years of college. Had never hit 300 at any level in junior college or D1. Or minor leagues. And then here we are. It is June 16th as we record this. We are recording this before Ayers plays on Tuesday night. He has a 10-game multi-hit hitting streak going into Tuesday night, which hitting streaks, okay, yeah, 10-game hitting streaks, not that big a deal. Not many guys have 10-game two or more hit streaks going. We've only seen a few of those over the last 10 years in the minor leagues. He is hitting 332, 442, 689, 17 homers, a good strikeout to walk ratio, 15 doubles. And by the way, good defensive reputation as a catcher. Jeff, you do the Cubs for us. How real does this feel for a guy who really has kind of leapt? Not just, I would say he leapt up to number 15 on your Cubs top, on our Cubs top 30 list. For the May update, I feel comfortable in saying he will move further up, not down, in the next update. But how hard is it to kind of figure out how much of this is blip and how much of this is real and sustainable change?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always the struggle, especially with a player like this that didn't have a ton of amateur pedigree. I think we talked about it this morning and had never hit 300 at any level until now, until this season, maybe in the Arizona Fall League, had a big fall league. That's kind of when he showed up on the radar, because you're not really looking at 23-year-old catchers in low A throughout the season. It's pretty easy to kind of write that off as, even if it was a decent performance and not outstanding, of like, all right, this is sort of a show and prove guy, maybe somebody who's on that 31 to kind of 50 range of players who that, you know, considering, you're asking questions about as you're doing your work, but not somebody you expect to necessarily rank. Certainly had the AFL, which put him onto the radar.
Just to summarize that: 379, 539, 591 in the AFL, 22 walks, 10 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. All of that was great, but it also was AFL pitching where you're like,
yeah,
okay. Yes, he held the bat and watched as balls went over his head, bounced to him, rolled to the plate, you know, a variety of things. So sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you sort of look at a catcher and the bat isn't necessarily the most important part of the profile. I don't think that's, I'm saying anything out of turn to anybody. But it certainly is something that puts it into perspective, especially considering opinions on catching defense. This can be at the amateur level and at the pro level. And we were having a conversation about Daniel Jackson the other day, you know, with Georgia. And it feels as if, depending upon who you talk to, you might get very different opinions on, you know, what that catching defense is like. It's been pretty good with airs. It's been a good arm. The framing metrics that I have seen had always been pretty good. You know, last year in terms of the data, there was impact here, a 104.5 90th percentile, just under 89 mile per hour average exit velocity, around a 30% miss rate, 20% miss rate in zone, decent chase and swing rate numbers and okay angles. But once again, you know, it's a 24-year-old switch hitter, you know, in the lowest level of full season baseball. So there's certainly some questions with that. Ayers has continued to move up different levels this year. Obviously, you mentioned now in Double A, the EV numbers are looking even better. It's now a 92 mile per hour average exit velocity. He's hitting the ball harder, more consistently. The contact rates have kind of stayed stable as he's moved up, which is almost like the contact rates improving when you're thinking about the difference between, you know, a full season in the low A Carolina League and the type of pitching you're going to face there versus Double A in the Southern League. Even if it's not the Southern League of old this year, I think that's still pretty impressive. I don't know if it's a top 100 prospect. I was asked that question yesterday. Certainly if he keeps this up for, I think, another month or so, he's really in contention for getting onto the list. I do think this is a top 10 Cubs prospect. And with some of the guys that have been on that list that have been injured all season, like an Ethan Conrad and others, it wouldn't be surprising to see him leapfrog some names who were considered much bigger names entering the season versus what Ayers was. So he continues to move up. I think the longer you do this, and I'm sure JJ and Ian will agree with me, you don't want to overreact, right? You'll learn your lesson a few times from overreacting to things. Kind of incrementally move players up as they meet certain benchmarks. And then once they meet sort of important benchmarks and maybe move beyond the question marks of a 25-year-old catcher, et cetera, then you can sort of get to that point. I don't know if he's a top 100 prospect. He's certainly a top 250 to 300 prospect now. He is a slam dunk top 10 in a system type of prospects for most systems outside of probably the deepest. So it's been a great showing by Ayers. And I think he's somebody that if you're a Cubs fan, you should be pretty positive about.
This is kind of the germ of the idea that I wrote with at baseballamerica.com is like looking at these guys who have these massive jumps. Now, it was a quick and dirty study, right? I didn't normalize for league. I didn't normalize for league context and all, but I just kind of basically said, give me every minor league hitter who had a 75 point or better improvement in batting average and on base and a 150 point improvement in slugging percentage from 1 year to the next, 250 or more plate appearances each year. And there's only like 26 guys who've done that in the last basically decade, right? It's a pretty small group. And the information on that, I would say, was muddy. Go back to what Jeff just said right there, why you want to have a little skepticism. There are Ryan McMahons and Ty Francis and Elliot Ramos and Jeremiah Jackson's in that group where you're like, oh, okay. In a number of these cases, it was kind of a player taking that step. And you go, okay, we were concerned before. Now we're not as concerned. And they end up having long big league careers. And then there is also a whole lot of guys like Jose Pujols and Chris Paul and Bobby Wernis and you know, Ryan Aguiar and guys like that, where you could say it was the perfect year where everything came together and then it went back to normal. And once it went back to normal, Mike Gerber, another example of this, where you're like, okay. And some of these cases, they're out of the minors 2 years later. I would say with this, kind of the point that Jeff made, the fact that Owen Ayers is a catcher and legitimately a solid catcher, I feel like he's now, that right there means with this kind of hitting ability, switch hitter with this kind of hitting ability, that right there is going to mean he's a big leaguer. It's now a question of how much of an impact is he going to have a big leaguer. I really tried to kind of dive into, I was watching video yesterday of him from State College, you know, of Florida swings to Marshall to 2024 to now. And what's notable about it is I was really focusing on his left-handed swing because I didn't have that much time. And that's where he does most of his, you know, swings from. He's, you know, switch hitter, left-handed, you're going to do more. It's not a dramatic difference. The main things that I saw from that were really about balance and weight transfer, right? Like the stance was pretty similar, maybe a little bit lower handset. But the key thing was, I would say that before, you would see a lot of times where he would, I would describe him as top heavy, where he would kind of end up over the plate where you could see that he was kind of lunging at the pitch. And so it was kind of like the weight goes through the upper body, like he swings, but the lower half's really not connected to it. What he's doing a lot better job, I felt like this, and it was interesting, you noted his 90 EV and max EVs haven't really changed this year, but the average really has. What he's doing, I feel like a lot better job of, is those swings where you stay back and you get that true rotation where you're getting that weight transfer. And so you have your whole body into the swing instead of something where you're kind of all arms and nothing else. It's going to be fascinating to see how this kind of sticks around. Ian, I don't want to keep you out of it either. Any thoughts that you have on Ayers?
No, I mean, he was someone I highlighted actually last week, talking about in my story about one compelling non-top 10 hitting prospect from every team. Just because it was just a very well-rounded data set. Like, as Jeff said, you know, it's solid average EVs or above average, depending on which one you're looking at. Consistently makes hard contact. And that was the thing that really stood out when looking at the Cubs system, the hard hit rate. I think I want to say it was like around 60%. So he's just consistently making hard contact. And given he was a 2024th 19th round pick, he signed for $50K. You know, that's a heck of a turnaround, especially considering how little he showed at the plate during his first full season. So between the AFL and then carrying it over this year, he's someone who definitely looks like a top 10 prospect easily in that system now.
Okay, so we are now going to go to, I would say, the player who's having a little bit more under the radar, but is having a truly great season, because Manuel Peña with the D-backs has 26 homers. It is June 16th, and he has 26 homers already. Leads the minor leagues by 4 homers right now, and is on pace to potentially hit 50 homers this year, which I believe off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure the last person to do that was Ryan Howard for Reading many years ago. Now, obviously, because Ryan Howard, the Phillies first baseman, not the Giants shortstop Ryan Howard, but that Ryan Howard has been retired for quite a while. So it is something where it's been a while. And I've gotten a question in the chat. I think you probably all have too. Like, why aren't you all writing more about Manuel Peña, right? Like, he's having this incredible season, and he's not one of the guys that we're citing as like Eric Hartman or, you know, Josiah Hartshorn or others. Like, we're not highlighting, look at this breakout prospect this year. Ian, I'll go to you first because you do the D-backs for us in midseason. Why is it that we're not talking about him? Or why is there still, to go back to what Jeff said, still on our part, I would say a little bit of a healthy skepticism there.
Yeah, and to be fair, we did write about him also actually in that same piece last week. He was featured in it. But yeah, I mean, Peña, what he's done this year is amazing. As JJ said, he's up to 26 home runs, and he had 31 career home runs heading into this season in five years. So, I think the biggest thing that's changed when you see him is he just looks way more physical. He's listed at 6'1", 170 pounds. When you watch him in video, he's well over 200 pounds, if I would have to guess now. And it's showing up. His EVs are way off, His average EV is up 5 miles an hour. His 90th is up 4 miles an hour. And he's just transformed his batted ball distribution. His fly ball rate is up considerably. You know, he's just completely leaning into power. And I think that's where the skepticism comes from. Because when I did my top 30 update for the Diamondbacks a couple weeks ago or in mid-May, he was a name that I flagged, had him, and he's just outside of it right now. But talking to scouts, there was just some skepticism for a couple reasons. Number one is the Texas League. He has pretty big home road splits. He plays in a very good hitter's park in Amarillo. And I haven't looked at them recently, but as of last week, it was a 342 average at home and a 237 average on the road. I believe he had a really good week last week. So it's probably,
I can update that. 342, 381, 784 at home, 287, 333, 587 on the road.
Yeah. So he had a great week last week, which has leveled that out some, but still, I mean, that's, you know, about a 200 OPS point difference. But the biggest one is just the chase rate. He's really made a trade-off to access this more power. He's just gotten a lot more aggressive, and his chase rate is now up around 41%. And that's just a red flag number. You know, the contact rates have gone down. It seems like he's kind of selling out for power, and it's obviously working. Like, he's playing in a hitting environment and he's playing to that environment. And I think there's just worries that against better pitching, that chase rate would be magnified if it's already 41% in Double A. And then the other issue is that it's something that doesn't show up in the stat line is the defensive value. He's someone who he kind of has moved all around this year. He's played first base, second base, third base, and left field for Arizona, but he's not really a great defender. He's probably best suited for first base. So that just puts a lot of pressure on his bat. And you know, what he's doing is remarkable. As I said, he had 31 career home runs coming into this season. He's probably going to pass that like this week at the rate he's on. Because in June, I think his OPS is like 1400. So he's just on an absolute tear. And it's a lot of fun to watch. But I think just long term, you know, it's one of those, he's going to have to continue to do it over and over again, given his profile.
The guy who comes to mind to me for him is Moises Gomez, who former Rays prospect, then Cardinals prospect. And Gomez had a year in 2022 where he basically hit 294, 371, 624, monster power, coming off a year where he really hadn't hit, was released, I believe, by the Rays, and then kind of found a home with the Cardinals. And it was a great year, and he moved up to AAA. Like, it was absolutely like, okay, but it was kind of at the upper end of his level. The other thing I think that we have to kind of put in a little bit of context here, again, it's a great year that Manuel Pena is having. When you hear 26 homers at this point in the season, we also have to acknowledge that the offensive environment across the minor leagues, we've written about this also at Baseball America, is utterly different. We are looking at home run environments that are, think Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, and level of in major leagues, that kind of home run environment. Whereas we went from Babe Ruth hits home runs and no one else does home runs environments until this in many leagues. So like, to give an example, he has 26 homers. This time last year, Shea Whitcomb with the Astros led all minor leaguers with 18 homers. And there were 8 minor league hitters who had 15 plus home runs at this time last year. This year, there are 5 20 home run hitters so far. And there are 33 hitters with 15 plus home runs right now. So we're talking about a very different environment that we're talking about. So again, we're not saying he's definitely an improved prospect, but Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah. And I just wanted to put this in some historical context going back the last couple of years. Players that got at least 250 plate appearances that had a 40% or higher chase rate. There were 3 players in the minor leagues in 2025 that had WOBAs north of 330 with a 40% chase rate. Those players were Tristan English, who was 28 years old in AAA, Jeremiah Jackson, who's up with the
Orioles now.
Yeah, who had major league experience prior to that season and was also in AAA, and Hector Rodriguez, who just kind of swings, and that's sort of what his approach is, a little bit younger in AAA. So 3 guys that did that. The previous year, in terms of guys that were 330 and above, it's Joe Kenzie Noel, which is probably a great comp. Davison De Los Santos, another really good comp. Yoel Pozo, Oscar Gonzalez, another really good comp. Cenk Mangum, who
very different
player, a speed, and it was a really good defender. Francisco Mejia, who was a bust washout prospect. Echendri Vargas in the lowest levels of the minors. Those are the only guys that had 330 WOBAs or above with a chase rate like that. It's just, it's a
hard thing.
Yeah, it is not, you know, a precursor to success, obviously, when you have this kind of approach. And 40% is substantially above sort of the trouble zone. That, like, once you get to 31, 32, you're probably swinging into a lot of outs. You get into 40, and then you start to see some of these hitters that we saw, like Noel, Rodriguez, et cetera. That's not a group that you necessarily want to be around. So I think, just to kind of put it into perspective, it's an awesome burner that Pena's on right now. The reason that we haven't gone crazy on this one or really reacted to it much is because there are massive red flags that are just waving in your face anytime you kind of dig into this profile. So good on him.
So we've got one more slugger that we're going to talk about, and then we're going to get into a little bit of a different profile. We'll do that right after this quick break.
With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. And Kratz, there are many, many baseball games on the inventory to check out all summer long. This is the season now. It is baseball season. Not many other options for you sports-wise. I know you can go anywhere you want to go with SeatGeek. There's so many tickets to choose from, but baseball's center stage now for the next couple months.
School's out. I'm going to watch some baseball games, some big league games, all in my area. And I want to know exactly what it looks like. And I also want the best deal. So I'm looking for the green, not the red.
That's right. The green hooks you up with the best deals on the app. Of course, we have the code. It's Territory10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any MLB tickets with the promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description of this episode. That'll download the app if you don't have it already, and you'll have the code automatically added to your account so that you can use that code later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
And we're back. And okay, we're going to hit one more slugger. This one, Jeff, this was yours. This is Jason Chiavone, the catcher for the Astros, promoted to Double A, second in the minors, I believe, right now, 22 home runs, right behind Manuel Pena. Okay, give us the case for, and maybe the case for why there's still a little bit of skepticism with him.
Yeah, I think it's a great scouting story. You know, that's one thing I think sometimes I was talking with someone on the Cape last week, an old timer, and kind of saying, you know, one of the things that gets lost now is, you know, some of the scouting stories of old, right? Of finding guys kind of off the beaten path. You know, now every name is online. With one click, you can go to our list or others, and you probably see 500 names in February or March. There's not a lot of secrets in areas any longer. So I think when a team does find a reasonable prospect, they don't have to be a future MLB regular, but a prospect that ranks in your system, that has upside, that potentially has some trade value, I think that's a credit to, you know, a great scouting job. And, you know, they landed this guy in the 11th round of the 2024 draft out of James Madison, had a brief debut, had kind of a okay season last year. It's a 121 WRC plus, but the power didn't show like it was this year. He ran a 37% strikeout rate with an obnoxiously high walk rate of 21.9%. Now, kind of fast forward to this year, and we're seeing this plus power for Chiavone really play up. I mean, it's a 110.6 90th percentile. He has hit a ball 115.5 this year. It is a 95.4 mile per hour average exit velocity. Now, that does come with significant hit tool risk, and that is really what the question is. We're talking about some of the best impact, some of the best Wobacon kind of batting in the game of a guy. When you're just looking at metrics, you're just looking at pure quality of contact. There are few players in professional baseball that are putting up the type of quality of contact that Chiavone is. The issue is Chiavone does not consistently make that contact therefore lies kind of the rub on this one. So, I mean, it's a near 30% zone miss rate. It's 60% contact rate overall. He does mitigate some of that with really good swing decisions. It's a 16% chase rate to just under 40% walk. He is fairly aggressive in the zone. It's nearly a 70% heart swing. So he does discern balls and strikes very well, which is typical of a catcher. You are just seeing a lot more baseballs over the course of your life than a guy who's a shortstop. And
from that angle.
Exactly.
So you got a shortstop, you're seeing them, but they're going away from you. Here,
exactly.
You're okay. Your head's a little different, but from here to here.
Yes, you have an intimate feel for the zone, right? So you know, I think you sort of look at the high end EVs and sort of what he's capable of. There is legitimate ability to stick behind the plate. You hear that from scouts outside the organization. Internally, they're very high in his future in terms of a catcher. There's another guy in the system, Will Bush, who's an excellent bat, who's technically a catcher kind of in name only. The feeling internally and externally is that he's not a catcher, where I think Schiavone kind of pops up this year and it's like, okay, this guy is a good receiver. There's some throwing ability here, some blocking ability, handles pitching staffs well, all that sort of thing. The bar to clear as a catcher offensively is much, much lower. And I think if you have this kind of power and you have on base ability, you can probably deal with some of the strikeouts and whiffs here than you could other places. I mean, if Spencer Jones was a everyday catcher, he probably is in the big leagues 2 years ago or a year ago. You know,
I'm going to come to Ian on this, but my point with that is it really fits perfectly the backup catcher profile, right? Which is most teams want their backup catcher. They will live with a 30, sometimes 20 hit tool if you're good defensively, and you'll run into some power. Like they would most teams for whatever reason would prefer to have that to the guy who has a 50 hit tool as your backup catcher with 20 power. Like they would much rather have the power and okay, yes, you're just not going to hit that much. But Ian, you had some thoughts about this as well.
Yeah, I just think just to emphasize what Jeff was saying, his EVs are like nutty. He ranks second among all 23-year-olds in terms of 90th percentile EV. He's fourth in hard hit rate amongst all 23-year-olds. So compared to his peers, he's at the top. Like we're talking about EVs up there with the only person ahead of him is Emmanuel Rodriguez. And I think we've talked endlessly about how much impact ability he has. And I think the thing that gives me more confidence in him, even though there are questions about his hit tool, is he does seem like someone in watching some video on Synergy, he can get to velo. Like he can do damage against velocity, which is, I think, something that with a backup catcher, especially, I feel like they're often guys with kind of a slower bat. It's more, you know, they'll run into a few home runs, but when they kind of get tripped up by velo or off speed pitches. And as Jeff said, he makes good swing decisions. Like he's shown so far that he can hit velo. So yeah, I think he's a really interesting guy in their system, especially largely because he is a catcher.
So we're going to next go to a guy, very different profile, but I'll lay this out because this is one where there's some overlap because Ian does the Twins for us now, but I've done the Twins for us in past years. And Ben Ross is a guy who the Twins have always kind of liked. He was a good defender, but he hit kind of a double-A wall, reached double-A at the very end of 2023, hit 226, 306, 226. That was 10 games. Okay, whatever. Goes back there in 24 and hits 212, 284, 341. That was 123 games. That's a little bit more of a, okay, that's a real sample there. Okay, let's send him back to Wichita again in 25, 219, 308, 363. Okay, when you are at 250 plus double-A games and you are a good defender, but you have basically a 630 ops pretty much for that long of a stretch, there's a pretty strong feeling that you're probably not going to hit. But what does he do this year? 424, 528, 797 in a brief stint in Wichita, promoted to St. Paul, where he has not been the same level of that. No one hits 424 over the course of the year, but it has been very solid. 822 ops at St. Paul as well. Okay, Ian, when you look at kind of, when you say there's skepticism, I would say that generally, when you talk about a 25-year-old who was back at the same level for the start for a fourth year in a row that he's been there, you start with massive levels of skepticism. But I feel like with Ben Ross, we're edging towards, okay, some of that skepticism starting to float away a little bit.
Definitely. And I think the reason is, and it's largely something that we're not going to see when we look at his stat line this year, it's his defense. This is a guy who's a legit shortstop. Like, there are some people who think he's a better shortstop than Merrick Houston. And I know JJ and I have talked on here about Merrick Houston's defensive ability. Ross is right up there. I was just looking at some numbers. This season, he's played shortstop, third base, and center field. He has two errors this year about 55 games at the position. So, and that's while playing two premium positions and third base. So this is a guy who he's an excellent defender. He can play three different positions in a minute. He could play second base, I'm sure, too, if they wanted him to. But he has that defensive value to fall back on. And now the bat has started to come to life. And even though, as JJ said, he slowed down a little bit in AAA, what he's doing at AAA is perfectly fine for him, given his profile. Like, the EVs are up. The swing decisions have gotten better. The underlying data is just better across the board. You know, it's an above average chase rate, above average in zone miss. Hard hit rate is way up this year. EVs are up, as I said. And you combine that with that defensive backbone to fall back on, and you have a guy who you can easily envision being a utility player who's probably close to big league ready. And for someone who has four straight years in AA, he's been unprotected in Rule 5 for multiple years. You know, this is a guy now who's a very legitimate prospect, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him up with the Twins at some point this season.
That's a pretty remarkable turnaround. But again, I think one of the things that we're kind of seeing as kind of a consistent trend on these is, and if I look back at the players who kind of took the big step forward, the ones who stuck, one of the things that does stand out with them is a Jake Cronenworth, a Ty France, a David Fletcher. You know, those are guys, Ryan McMahon. Having defensive value gives you a much better chance to prove it's not a fluke, to prove it's not a one-year blip, than it is if you're a guy who's a bat-only profile. That's something that really does stand out here as well. I kind of with you, like, there's a reason that we kind of kept asking about Ben Ross year after year, because he's one of those guys who defensively was valuable enough that he wasn't going to have to hit a ton. I don't think he's going to hit a ton. I don't think that he's going to still, I don't think he's more than a utility guy in the big leagues, but that utility profile now seems very plausible. Especially, let's also just lay out, we've talked about it before the season, and a couple of commenters yelled at us like, what are you saying? Brooks Lee's not a big league shortstop. I will say again, Brooks Lee is not a big league shortstop. Good player, but that's not his role. And we've seen this with the Twins this year. They just don't have, like, really a big leaguer. Like, Ryan Kreidler has been their best defensive shortstop at the big league level. They've already kind of gone through the, okay, it's not good, RC is not going to be the answer. They've moved Brooks Lee off the position. I would say that, you know, coming up, we have Kalen Culprepper has made improvements, and we have Ben Ross. There may be the time at some point this year, because if they need gloves, those are the guys who actually probably are better than some of the guys they've had doing it at the big league level.
I look at someone like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and he's had a long major league career doing this similar skill set. And it just, you know, if you can play up the middle, multiple positions, and hold your own at the plate, and Ross didn't clear that second bar heading into this year. Now he does. And that's, yeah, defense gets you there. Offense keeps you there. And I think he's now at that point where he can check both those boxes.
So that is another of these unheralded prospects having big years. We're going to hit a couple more of these. By the way, we are going to make a little bit of audible. I think I said at the start of the show, we're going to talk about rookie ball guys too. We'll do that next week, because this is already going to be a full show just talking about these kind of, the guys who've had really big years who are a little bit less on the radar coming into the year. So we'll do that next week as well. But we'll do that right after this quick break. And we're back. Okay, this one to me, less heralded prospects is probably not a great way to describe Lonnie White Jr. And I say that because he was very much like a heralded prospect when he was drafted, signed by the Pirates. This is the guy who was part of when the Pirates moved money around. He was a two-sport star in high school, got big money. And I think you could really say one of the most unfortunate things with Lonnie White was just he really did have trouble staying on the field. That was probably one of the biggest problems in his development, was the number of injuries there. Last ranked on our top 30, you know, coming into the season in 2024. But here we are. Okay, again, start with caveats. Reached Greensboro in 24, hit 167, 275, 340, and 89 games. That's not good. That's not what you want to see. Went back to Greensboro in 2025, 220, 329, 394. Back for try three this year, 298, 413, 595. And I would say more importantly, got the promotion to AA Altoona, 295, 398, 552. He has 13 homers in 53 games this year. His career high is 14 homers. He's going to easily break that if he stays healthy. Jeff, how much of this is we're finally seeing the talent come that we've long expected to be here kind of rise and through the injuries and through the development? And how much of it, though, is now, okay, he's 23 years old. He was at high A until recently, pumped the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, I think to an extent, both things can be true. We can be cautiously optimistic and reasonably skeptical with White. He's always, you know, it is a colder weather background, you know, is from, I think, the Philly area, because he went to Malvern Prep, I guess Southern Jersey, still Southern, you know, kind of the Philly area. So was like a Northeast cold weather prospect. I think we've seen with Josh Baez that it can take a few years, especially if there is a multi-sport background, a guy who has big athleticism and is going to swing for impact and power. It can take a little longer for the hit tool to sort of come along. Looking at the 2025 version of Lonnie White, it wasn't great. The 60% contact rate overall, 40% miss rate, you know, under 70% in zone, which is awful. It was a 32% zone miss rate last year. Always kind of had that three true outcomes kind of profile with good swing decisions. The EVs were always good. They're still really, really good. But I think the year-over-year difference is within those plate skill metrics. The chase rate has even gotten better than it was, and it wasn't bad a year ago. He's very aggressive in zone. It's not an incredibly low. It's a 43.7% swing rate to like an 18.7% chase rate, which is a really good gap. And that's kind of highlighted by a 75% hard swing, which is a really good number in zone. That means he is truly discerning balls and strikes, as we talked about with Chiavone. That's an important thing when you have a little bit of swing and miss in your profile, is to kind of mitigate that swing and miss risk with good swing decisions, swinging at the right pitches, swinging at pitches that you can do damage, not taking a lot of pitches down the middle of the plate for strikes as well. Because your bat's going to already probably put you behind in some counts from time to time. So you're working with an advantage more often. Your at bats, when you're working with an advantage, just simply go a lot better. When you make more contact and you have the kind of contact that Lonnie White has, any athleticism, all that sort of stuff, the batting average on balls in play continue to tick up as well. All that stuff is going to work. So do I know if this is going to work long-term? The jury's still out there. I think we have to see a larger sample in the upper minors of him having success and showing these trends were in a blip, that there is maybe now 40 contact as opposed to 30 or worse, which is what we were kind of looking at in terms of the 2080 scale over the last couple of years. But the impact's here, the swing decisions are here, the angles are here. If he can maintain this, I think that we're probably looking at, you know, potential for an everyday guy or, you know, an interesting second division regular type. But he kind of went from not really a prospect any longer to somebody that where you're like, okay, there could be something here. If he continues to do it throughout the season, he could potentially, you know, move that ceiling up and that viewpoint up probably a little bit. But there's some good things here, I think, to focus on. There's also a reason to be skeptical just based on the track record and the type of player it is.
I know we're being repetitive, but that's what we're trying to say is we've done this a long time. And basically, you're trying to sift through. if there are three of these guys who kind of fit this profile, I would say that one ends up being like, okay, it's a true talent improvement. Another ends up being a, okay, there was some improvement, but at the same, it made him into an up and down guy. And the third guy, it's like, no, it was a blip of where everything came together, but it doesn't stick. Ian, I feel like that we're giving a perfect ad for why you should subscribe to baseballamerica.com. You wrote also about Lonnie White Jr. If you're enjoying this topic, Ian wrote about a lot of these guys last week in his one compelling non-top 10 hitting prospect for each organization. You wrote about Lonnie White Jr. as well. What did you kind of come to a conclusion of?
Yeah, he was one of the most interesting. He was the one I think I spent the most time watching video of because he's got such an intriguing background. You know, this guy's been around since 2021. Obviously, he was a high pedigree guy coming out of the draft, and just combination of injuries and poor performance have really slowed him down. But what really stood out to me is since he's been promoted to Double A, he's performing largely similarly to what he was doing in High A. You know, slugging percentage, OBP and average are down like a tick, but not really that much difference. The only real big difference is the strikeout rate has jumped. In High A, it was 21%. It's jumped up to 31% in Double A. That's what I'm kind of monitoring, and is what Jeff said. You know, the hit tool is going to be is where the variance is going to come from here with him. You know, if he can get to a 40 hit tool, he's probably a regular. If he stays in a 30, he's probably a bench guy. And if it's a 20, which it was coming into this year, he's probably, you know, just an upper minor depth guy. That's the kind of swing here. And the good news with White, kind of like what we talked about with Ross, is he does have secondary skills to fall back on. This is a guy who's a really good athlete. He's a plus to better runner, and he has a chance to – he's a pretty good center fielder. He's, I would say, you know, above average plus defense in the outfield. So there are some skills to fall back on here. But, you know, right guy with that profile, you're going to have to hit in some capacity. It's harder to stick on a roster in that role. So if he can, you know, show the contact skills, and even if he's like a 30% strikeout rate guy, he probably does get to the big league still because of his combination of power, speed, and defense. But it's just, yeah, it can't regress too much further back now that he's in Double A.
So the last one of these that we are going to do does not fit that defensive profile, I have to say. But Jeff, again, Jeff does the Blue Jays. Sean Keyes, third baseman / first baseman. I would say more first baseman / third baseman. We're listing as a first baseman on the graphic for people watching on YouTube. Keyes has got to hit, right? Jeff, that's kind of, this is again going back to, this is a guy who the value is tied to the bat, but good news, he's hitting.
Yeah, and I think this was one that all throughout the offseason we sort of talked about a little bit about how much he kind of underperformed his metrics last year in Vancouver, which, by the way, he wasn't the only guy that was the case. I had kind of pointed to Namala's strikeout rate and contact rates and all that sort of stuff really trending upward last year, but him not performing for months despite not swinging and missing. It wasn't a matter of like the contact or the hit tool bottoming out. I don't know what was going on there, but when you kind of look at his numbers from last year, it's not that different from what you're looking at this year. In fact, might even be a little bit better from last year. Of course, it's at a lower level. But there is sort of average to fringe average contact here. There is average to sort of fringe average swing decisions. He's a little bit more aggressive, but not someone who's consistently hitting, swinging himself into outs. I'd say the biggest difference between this year and last year is Sean Keyes has gotten much stronger and is hitting the ball much harder. His average EV last year was 90 miles per hour. It's up to 93.4. His 90th percentile last year was 104.8. It's jumped to 109.3 this year. He's hit a ball 115.8, so all intents and purposes, a 116 on the record. Last year, his max was 112. He has a 55% hard hit rate this season. He's pulling the air pulling the ball in the air consistently. There's a lot of good things going on here, but he is really going to have to hit because it is a limited defensive profile. That said, this is not necessarily new territory for the Blue Jays. They've had some success with these lower pedigree guys that they've drafted or acquired whether it's like Pinongo, who's having a really good season and has been, you know, up with the big league club this year. Davis Schneider, who for a few years was kind of a productive bench bat for the Blue Jays. I think he's back in AAA. I don't know if he's kind of riding the Buffalo to Toronto train quite a bit this season, but all guys that kind of have performed beyond what their pedigree was and what the acquisition cost is. Keys can hit. It's just a matter of where do you stick him, and is he really going to hit enough to be, you know, a first baseman in the big leagues that gets 400 plus plate appearances? I'm not sure that I can necessarily answer that at this moment. But it is a left-handed bat, so you know, if it leans more toward the platoon side, he is a strong side platoon option. So I don't know if this is an everyday regular. I'd probably err on the side that it's not. But I do think that he'll certainly be in the big leagues at some point over the next couple of years and has the ability to hit and has the ability to hit for power. So you can't ignore that.
The best way I would put it is that when, most of the time when you see this profile, and it's the guy, if really like, if you're Sean Keyes, great development this year. Like you said, the first thing to do, hit the ball a lot harder. That's never a bad thing, right? So that really does give you a much clearer path. If you said, okay, so what's the off-season to-do list for next year? Become playable at third base. Because I think if he could get to a 45 defensively at third base, where you become a left-handed hitting option at two spots, your path to carving out 300 big league plate appearances a year is exponentially clearer than if you're the guy who is a first base only, first base DH profile. Those guys, it's, you can find your way to 100 plate appearances every now and then because the big leaguer gets hurt, you come up, you hit a little bit, you get to stick around for another couple of weeks afterwards until you cool off, those kind of things. But there just aren't a whole lot of, there aren't a whole lot of non like thumpers who get to stick at first base day in, day out and get to stick in the big leagues for a full season unless you really, again, you either play another position or you've got to really mash. And it's hard to, you know, or you mashed at some point, right? Like the Paul Goldschmidts of the world can stick around for a while because, hey, once you are like an MVP caliber player, then you kind of have your off ramp. It's a lot harder. We could sit here and just play the game of remember some guys and probably rattle off 25 first basemen over the years who had good numbers in AA, AAA. And one of the guys who had one of those big emergences was Lucan Baker, right? Lucan Baker was a dude in college. He led, basically had a year where he hit 330 in AAA with 33 bombs. But it's kind of been up and down guy. Why? Well, he's a first base only type, and it's really hard to stick as a first base only type. Ian, any other thoughts you had on Keyes?
No, I agree with everything that Jeff said. I think that what you said though with the defensive versatility, that's going to be the key for him. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they gave him a left fielder or an outfielder as well to see what it looked like in left field. Because again, if you can even fake it out there, that's just being versatile is very important, especially with the way the Blue Jays are playing.
Speaking of Pinongo, who
they're running a bunch of platoons.
Not great.
No. And so, yeah, I mean, they're running a bunch of platoons. They're playing a bunch of guys who are not great defenders at positions they probably shouldn't be playing. But if you minimize exposure, you can make that work. And I think Toronto's a very well-run team. They're a very smart team. And I think that's something that we could see in Key's future, especially if he continues to hit. Because since he's been up to AAA, he's been really good. And if that continues, especially with the Blue Jays lineup kind of scuffling lately, I wonder if he becomes someone that maybe over the summer becomes in the picture for a call-up.
So those are six performing hitting prospects who are a little bit lower down, a little bit less on the radar. And we wanted to cover why some of them kind of are still at the back of list and why some are really moving up on top 30s. And again, there's a little bit of a balance here. There's a push and pull. We want to acknowledge, we want to gather information, move these guys up, but at the same time, we don't want to get overheated because we also know, we just named six of these. If we went back and listened to this 5 years from now, my prediction is, I want to see what you guys think. Mine is that one of these guys will be like, wow, that guy ended up really being a, and I don't want to say a five war a year player or anything like that, but that guy ended up being someone who's still in the big leagues, is at 1500 plate appearances, has had some 2-3 war seasons type. There's going to be one of those. There's probably going to be one or two more who it's like, that guy had a good year here. That year was not so good. He's been up and down, but he's kind of been a big leaguer. And there's probably going to be two guys where it's like, oh, okay, remember when he had that great year and then it just never turned into anything? I kind of feel like that's kind of generally how this, when we say we have to have some skepticism, one third, or I'd say more like 1/5 big league regular, 1/5, 1/6 of these. 2/6, 1/3 is going to be big leaguers of some sort. And then probably 2 or 3 of these guys will be guys who either get a cup of coffee or are longer time minor league kind of vets kind of guys. Is that too skeptical? Am I being too cynical, or does that make sense to you guys?
No, I think that makes sense. I was kind of
thinking, yeah, I think it's like, reasonable.
You'll get 150, there'll be a couple of 40s, and there's going to be a couple of 30s in this group. That's probably like the likely distribution.
Okay, we'll finish this with one more. If you're going to pick one guy off of this group that we talked about, who is going to be a 50, who's going to be a multi-year big league regular out of this group, who would it be? I'll go first because I have mine already. It's going to be Ohnir's, is my thought.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
That was where I was going to go.
I think we all agree. I think we all think
Ohnir's.
I think the catchers have a huge leg up here.
The framing, the arm, and I would say, like, look, Ohnir's is not going to keep performing at the level he's performing right now. If he does, he's going to be a big league star. But if you cut 30% off of this, you know, the 30% haircut at the big league level, he's still a switch hitting catcher who frames well, who has a good arm, who can be a legitimate catcher. Switch hitting catchers who can hit even a little bit have a pretty good way to stick around. So to me, I think that's the pretty obvious one. Okay. I would say if you ask me like most big league at bats about the rest of this group, I'm probably going to say Ben Ross, because I just feel like that we could turn around and say he never had 250 plate appearances in a season, but he had 5 years in the big leagues because of his defense. But yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, I would say
anyone else think
Ross longest career, hot best peak I could see Ayers. And I think Schiavone also is another one. I just think the catchers just have an inherent advantage in this an exercise like this because of how low the bar is. I mean, talking about switch hitting catchers lasting forever, Sandy Leone is still jumping around. They're still in the big leagues. So I think that shows you kind of the bar. If you can catch and throw and switch hit, you'll find a job.
The other thing I'll say is it also widens out your window of plausibility as a prospect. There's not really a whole lot of 28-year-olds, 29-year-olds reaching the majors at shortstop or outfield where you're like, oh, and then they end up having a long career. There are absolutely 28-year-old catchers who, like, that's their first season in the majors, and then you end up looking around and they're still playing at 35, 36 because it is, again, it's that when I have my skepticism about all this, which you have to have some. Again, we root for prospects, but you also have to be realistic about this. For me, having seen this over all these years, one of the things that really does stand out is that catchers is where these leaps can really be real, because sometimes I feel like it's just like you've spent so long just figuring out how to do your main job, which is catch, work with pitchers, be a great defender, all those things, that finally when you reach a level of not just knowing how to do that mentally and physically, but on top of that, like a Liam Hicks is a perfect example. Ian kind of said that in Slack. Like those kind of guys where it's like, once you hit that, I think all of a sudden the game, the hitting part kind of finally starts to become like make sense, because you're like, oh, now that I don't have to spend 100% of my mental and physical effort to do the defensive job of my, now I have enough room to actually start to hit. And sometimes we see that. We see guys who 30-year-old, 31-year-old catchers who are having their best offensive season. You don't see that a lot as outfielders and shortstops nowadays. But that is the Baseball America Prospect Podcast for this week. Glad we just kept it to the performing prospects, because we would have been putting in a 2-hour you know, again, that's a topic we'll revisit, I believe, next week. We have a topic already set for next week. You can look forward for that. But again, check out, if you enjoyed this, I promise you, you're going to enjoy everything over at baseballamerica.com. Ian had multiple people that we talked about today. He wrote about last week. So the BA subscriber already has not just some info on these guys, but some info on 25, 26 other guys like this kind of profile. Again, we want to help you kind of sort out which is signal and what is noise. That's one of the things that's one of our jobs. We do a lot of reporting on that, talking to people in the game, but we also, you know, try to use our own brains as well to kind of help with that. So that is the podcast for Ian, for Jeff. I'm JJ. So long, everybody.